The Rambam tells us that there was a custom, and obviously this custom is no longer prevalent, but the Rambam in Hilchos Tefillah, Perek Zayin Halacha Yud Gimel, says as follows. There was a custom in the davening, in the routine davening of every single day. In some places they said, after Yishtabach, at the conclusion of the Psuk in the Zimra, after the bracha of Yishtabach, and before they would say the Kaddish and the Baruch Hu, which introduces the Birchas Kriyat Shema, Yotzer Or, they would say in certain places the Shira, Shiras Hayam, Oz Yashir Moshe, and in certain places they would say Ha'azinu. And the Rambam says in certain places there were individuals that would say both. And everything depends upon the custom. This is the Lashon HaRambam. Yesh mekomos shenahagu bahem likros b'chol yom achar shemevorchim yishtabach shiras hayam v'achar kach mevorchim al hashma. V'yesh mekomos shekorin shiras ha'azinu. V'yesh yechidim shekorim shtei hashiros hakol lefi haminog. One is obligated to wonder what exactly was the point. Now, the fact that Shira is after Yishtabach is not that relevant to us. The reason for it was that the minhag at the time was to include inside the brackets of the brachos Baruch She'omar and Yishtabach only mizmorim of David HaMelech. David is called Ne'im Zemiros Yisrael. And the Tehilos V'Sishbachos that we offer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu are generally, by and large, the Shirim and Tishbachos of David HaMelech. In fact, in the first bracha that begins the Psukei Dezimra, we say it explicitly. Uv'Shirei David, we will praise you. We praise Hashem with Shirei David. Obviously, the Shira of Yamsuf was not Shirei David. So therefore, even though they wanted to include the Shira, they, at that time, in their minhag, refused to include it within the framework of the Psukei Dezimra. So they had to form some sort of compromise. You want to say it, but you cannot say it within the brackets. Say it outside of the brackets. So right after Yishtabach, before they would continue with the tefillah, they would say the Shira then. So that's something that we, in our minhag, have resolved in the opposite direction. We say the Shiras Hayam every morning, and we include it within the brackets. But who has ever heard of anyone saying Shiras Ha'azinu before or after Yishtabach? The answer is, it's not a Shira in the usual sense. It's not a Shevach v'hodoya to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why in the world should we mention Hazinu in the context of Psukei Dezimra? Hazinu is not Psukei Dezimra. It's not Psukim of Shevach, Psukim of Hallel, Psukim of Hodah. On the contrary, anyone that looks at Hazinu sees material that leads to a person's sense of anxiety and depression and frustration at the failure of Klal Yisrael to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu properly. We are asking, Halashem tigmulu zos am novo v'lo chacham? Is it possible that you can do this to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? A people that were the descendants of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, that were taken out of Mitzrayim, a people that were given the Torah, a people that were promised, Bonim atem l'Hashem Elokeichem, you are the children of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How could you fail him so terribly? And the whole essence of Hazinu, pasuk after pasuk, is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did so much, ki chelek Hashem amo, and he gives them the Torah, Hashem bodod yanchenu, yarkiveyu abama seyoretz, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives them, takes them to the highest places, and he gives them the best crop and the most delicious food. They drank the blood of grapes for wine, and they became fat, and they rebelled. Vayishman yeshurun vayivot. Is that the material for Shevach Vaidoya? What is the point of reciting Ha'azinu in the context of Psukei Dezimra? And again, the fact that it's not within the brackets is only because it's not Shirei David. But if it would have been Shirei David, apparently it could be included within and before Yishtabach, within the Psukei Dezimra. How can Ha'azinu be part of the Psukei Dezimra? How can you compare the notion of Shira of Ha'azinu to the notion of Shira of Oz Yoshe Moshe Uvnei Yisrael, which is so full of the potential of Klal Yisrael and the future of Klal Yisrael? And it's a song of triumph. It's a song of discovery of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Masha Ra'as HaShivcha Alayam. The maidservant at Yam Suf had a sense of the divine revelation. How can we compare Ha'azinu to Oz Yoshe Moshe? Where is the Tehillah and the Shevach? There's a Gemara in Maseches Megillah, Daf Tes Zayin Amud Beis. Kol Hashirois Kulon Nichtovois Oriach Al Gabi Levena Ulevena Al Gabi Oriach. If everyone looks at a wall of brickwork, most of the time the bricks are not lined up simply one on top of the other. The reason for that is that when a person builds a wall of brick, he wants to give it that strength, that tensile strength that is only possible if he staggers the bricks. And one brick is on top of two halves of two bricks. And that's how it's staggered, and it gives the wall incredible strength. Lining up bricks one on top of the other, at a certain point, the wall is going to fall down and crumble. So therefore, the Shira, apparently, Shiras Hayam, Oz Yoshe Moshe, and other Shiras, in the Gemara it says all the Shiras, except for the Shira of Megillas Haman, Megillas Esther. Where is the Shira in Megillas Esther? You look at the Aseres B'nei Haman. The 10 sons of Haman are lined up, one on top of the other. The ace Parshandosa, the ace Dalfon, the ace Asposa, the ace Parosa, the ace Aridosa, etc. What is the lineup? There's a big space in between. It's not written in the regular way of consecutive words covering the entire column, and then you go to the next line, and then to the next line. But rather, there are only two words on the entire row. One to the right, one to the left, with a big space in between. So that if you look at the two columns, they're perfectly lined up, one word on top of the other, two separate columns like pillars on both sides of that parchment. And that is different in its lineup, in its structure, says the Gemara, than the Shira of Yam Suf, of Oz Yoshe Moshe. Because when you look at the Shira in written, inscribed in the Torah, as it is written, the calligraphy of the Torah, it is written in the manner of the staggered bricks. Ariach al gabe levena. The staggered bricks, not Ariach al gabe Ariach, ulevena al gabe levena. So the spacing and the words are put together different than prose, the prose parts of the Torah, but at the same time, they're not simply two columns lined up. Says the Gemara again, Kol Hashiros Kulon Nichtavos Ariach Agabi Levena Ulevena Agabi Ariach. The Shiros are written in that staggered formation. It's a sign, an indication that the Shira is unique and different from the rest of the prose writing of the Torah and of Tanakh. Chutz, but there is an exception. Chutz Mishira Zu, very remarkable way of describing Megillas Esther. It's a Shira, and the Shira is Aseres B'nei Haman. The fact that Aseres B'nei Haman were hung is something apparently very, very special. It's beyond our purview to talk about that, but it's called in the Gemara Maseches Megillah, what? Shira. And this shira is written without the staggering of the words, but rather in two columns, as I described, Ariach agabe Ariach, Olevena agabe Olevena. Two columns with white space in between. Why? And there's another example that they give. What is the other example? Interestingly enough, at the end of Sefer Yehoshua, they have a whole list of the kings of the Canaanites, of the Canaanim. And that list is written also as a shira. It's not written in prose form. And the shira of those kings of the Canaanites who were wiped out by Yehoshua and Bnei Yisrael when they came and they conquered the land, that shira, why is it a shira? Again, apparently, the fact that Klal Yisrael overcame this bitter enemy and fulfilled the promise of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the same way that the 10 sons of Haman were hung is something special, and apparently means more than merely that Haman was not successful in his attempt to destroy and eradicate Bnei Yisrael. There's something special about the Mapola of Haman that it was so complete that it wiped out his entire family. And maybe the Amalek element is there as well. But both are called Shira, and they're both lined up differently than Shira Sayam. How are they lined up? In columns. So the kings of Canaan in Yehoshua and the sons of Haman in Megillas Esther are lined up in columns. Why? Why is that different? So the Gemara says, my taima, what is the reason that they're lined up in columns and not staggered, like Shira in general? So the Gemara doesn't suggest, well, it's not really a Shira like Shira Sayam. No, they don't say that at all. They give a different reason. Apparently, they felt it is a Shira, which is remarkable. So why are they not staggered if it's a Shira? Aseres Bnei Haman and the kings of Canaan and Yehoshua. Shelo Tehei Tekuma Lemapolo Son. Because we want to give the image that bricks that are lined up one on top of the other without being staggered give the impression of a wall that's going to cave in at any moment. And that is an image which we want to convey concerning the Aseres Bnei Haman, our enemy, concerning the Canaanim, our enemy, that they should not be able to rise up again. In other words, we deliberately use the image of bricks that are fragile, of a wall that is about to collapse, to give the sense that this enemy will never be able to overcome us. Masha'en came the Shira of Yamsuf, which is a Shira of the revelation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There, it's the success of Bnei Yisrael that's being emphasized. Tevi'eimo v'sikto'eimo v'har nachaloscha mochon l'shivtucha pa'alta Hashem. Hashem yimloch la'olam v'ayat. Hashem will be king forever and ever. That Shira, mi kamocha ba'elim, that Shira is a Shira which we want to be everlasting. So the structure that we give in the image of the bricks is the staggered bricks which last forever. That's the Gemara. The Gemara says that these bricks give the impression that they're about to cave in because we're speaking about the lack of the success of the Rishayim to get to us. The Shira of the Yam, that speaks about our tremendous ascendancy, our closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We want that to be forever. Staggered bricks, strong wall. Comes along the Ritva, one of the great commentaries on the Masechta. And the Ritva, right there, on Daf Tes Zayin Amud Beis in Maseches Megillah, he asks a simple question. He says, the Shira of Ha'azinu is also lined up in columns. So how can the Gemara say that the only two examples of the column lineup, which indicates the weaker wall, which is about to collapse, is the Aseres Bnei Haman of the Megillas Esther and the kings of Canaan in Sefer Yehoshua, when the most famous or the most obvious example is right in front of our eyes in the Sefer Torah, namely Parshas Ha'azinu, the Shira of Ha'azinu. So what does he say? So he says, It's lav dafka. They were just giving examples. What is the common denominator? So the common denominator, he says, is that it's mapoloson shel rishoy. And shiras ha'azinu also falls into the category, because shiras ha'azinu is also the destruction of the rishoy. Now, I am assuming that he's referring to Ma'palosim shel Rishayim of the Umos Ha'olam. There's a constant battle between Yisrael and the Tzad HaTov and the Umos Ha'olam, the Tzad HaRa. And ultimately, the vision of Klal Yisrael is that we are vindicated. Yemos HaMashiach brings a tkufa of peace and tranquility in the entire world. And we are not only going to be ourselves the servants of Hashem, but we inspire the whole world, and everybody joins us. V'noharu elav kol hagoyim ki mitzion teitzei soro dvar Hashem Yerushalayim. The word comes out of Zion. It means that the Torah that is being spread is not just for us, but then the goyim, the extreme to Yerushalayim, they'll say, l'chu v'nal el har Hashem el beis Elokei Yaakov. We want to be part of this. We want to learn from you. We want to be inspired by you. That ultimate moment of triumph has exactly its birth in the Shira, quote-unquote, of Ha'azinu, comes at the very end and is exactly one pasuk. One verse of many, at the very end, after criticism, and Rebbeinu Shlom says, "Lu chachmu yaskilu zos yavinu l'acharisam." If they had any seichel, if they had any intelligence, would they not understand? How could it be echa yirdof echad elef ushnayim yonisu rivava? How could it be that the Yidden, the Jews, are so scared out of their wits that even one can chase 1,000? And two can chase 10,000. Imlo kitzuram mecharam, if not for the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sold them out because of the averos that they did. V'Hashem hisgiram, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them over to the enemy. And then, all of a sudden, at the very, very end, ki adin Hashem amo v'al avodov yisnechom ki yireh ki oz lasyod v'efes atzur v'azuv. There'll come a time when HaKadosh Baruch Hu will judge his people and he'll see that they're in a desperate situation. And what will happen then? The Omar Eyaloi Kemoi, God will say, where is their God that they trusted in? Where is the power that the Jews felt comfortable with and felt encouraged by, that they abandoned me? Look at the devastation, look at this struggle, look at this tremendous failure that Klal Yisrael has suffered in all these generations of leaving me behind. So Adarabba, Hashem asks, where is their God? Let him come and save them if they're so confident to abandon me. What did they abandon me for? Where are the gods who ate the fat of their sacrifices and drank the wine of their libations, the translation has here? Let them now get up and help you. Let them be your protector. So even at the very end of the Shira, towards the last pasuk, Hashem is still pounding away that even at the end of days, towards the very end of time, before Yemos HaMashiach, there's still going to be so many Jews who cannot hear the message of Hashem. And Hashem is warning them, let these gods, and gods does not have to be a statue that's in front of you that you sacrifice to. Sometimes God can be a principle, a stale, useless principle, whatever ism it is. But Hashem says, let this God get up and help you. Let him save you. And now he says, you see, ani anihu ve'ein Elohim imadi. There are no other gods with me. I kill and I give life. If I crush, I will heal. But there is no protection from my power. Not stop. At the very end, Harninu Goyim Amo, let the tribes of his nation sing praise. Ki dam avodov yikom, for he will avenge his servant's blood. V'nokom yoshiv litzarav, and he'll bring vengeance upon his foes. V'chiper admoso amo, and he will reconcile his people to their land. After pasuk of criticism, pasuk after pasuk of warning, of I told you so, I showed you the way, you failed me, you ignored me, Shira, this is Shira, and this is my palosan shel rishayim, that it has to be brick on top of brick. Where's the ma palosan shel rishayim? The ma palosan shel rishayim is the last pasuk. And for this reason, the Shira is lined up brick upon brick. But the question is, why is it called a Shira altogether? Why is it a Shira? Where is the song of triumph? Where is the song of success? Where is the song of salvation? Oz Yosher Moshe is our paradigm. How can you put Oz Yosher Moshe in the same context together with Hazinu? How can you consider Hazinu a Shira? How could it be that in the general orbit of Psuka de Zimra, inside the bracket, outside the bracket, there were those who would recite Hazinu and not Shira Sayam, and there were those who would recite both. Hakol lefi haminog, says the Rambam. We're not used to it because none of us say Hazinu in the mornings. So we find it to be strange, but if somebody would make that suggestion today, on his own, you know something? It's appropriate to say Hazinu Psuka de Zimra. On a theoretical level, we don't just start making minhagim of our own. But on a theoretical level, somebody would come and say, you know, why don't we say Hazinu in the morning, Psuka de Zimra? So another person would come and say to him, why in the world should we say Hazinu in the morning? Where is the Psuka de Zimra connection? Where is the Shevach to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Where is the Shira? And yet, we call Hazinu a Shira. Who calls Hazinu a Shira? The answer is the Ribbono Shel Olam. Now here's a remarkable thing. And this is something that if we realize the import of it, has to, in the colloquial sense, blow our minds. This is the Rambam at the beginning of the laws of Sefer Torah. The Rambam says that every person is obligated to write for himself a Sefer Torah. There are different rules and regulations about this halacha and why we don't individually each one do that today. And some people who are very righteous and pious and who can afford it have a Sefer Torah written for them. And then sometimes they ink in the last word or the last letter so that they can participate in the writing itself. And nevertheless, the halacha remains. And the Rambam says the following. Mitzvahs Asay, this is the beginning of Hilchis Sefer Torah, is the last of Tefillin Mezuzah V'Sefer Torah. It's a collection of halachos, and that's why it's Perek Zayin, the seventh Perek of that collection. Because the collection begins with the Dinim of Tefillin and then continues with the Dinim of Mezuzah. And finally, beginning with the seventh chapter, the halachos of writing a Sefer Torah. But it's really the first halacha of this segment of Hilchos Sefer Torah. So what does the Rambam say in the first halacha? The mitzvah. What is the mitzvah? So the Rambam says, mitzvahs asay. It is one of the 613 commandments. Mitzvahs asay al kol ish v'ish mi Yisrael lichtoiv Sefer Torah la'atzmo. Shenemar, where is that verse in the Torah that tells me that there's an obligation for each Jew to write a Sefer Torah for himself? Shenemar, v'ata, and now, kisvu lochem es hashira, write for yourselves the Shira.
Klomar. Now here the Rambam drops a bombshell. Unlike other commentaries who understand that the word shira here in this verse, kisvu lachem es hashira, refers to the entire Torah, from Bereishis till the last words, la'ene kol Yisrael, and shira is used as an expression for Torah in its entirety, the Rambam disagrees, and the Rambam says that shira means hazinu. Hazinu. Kisvu lachem es hashira hazos, v'lamdo es bnei Yisrael sima b'fiem, l'man tia li hashira hazos li'ed b'vnei Yisrael, that this shira shall be a testimony against bnei Yisrael. That is why I want you to write the shira. Of course, there's a very simple question. It doesn't cost that much to have a scribe write a shira of hazinu. So why don't we all do that? Where does the Rambam get from hazinu and the commandment to write hazinu to a commandment, therefore, to write the whole Torah? So the Rambam does not hesitate, and he explains it. The Rambam says, "Shenemar va'ato kisvu lachem es hashira, klomar, kisvu lachem Torah sheyesh ba shira." You have to write the whole Torah because you have to write the shira of hazinu. And you cannot write the shira of hazinu by itself. Why not? Lefi, because she'ein kosvin es ha-Torah parshios parshios. This point was so taken that you cannot write the Sefer Torah just hazinu, you cannot write the parsha of hazinu alone. You can only write it in the context of the entire Torah. You need the whole Torah to be the context for hazinu, because you cannot write hazinu by itself. Ein kosvin Torah parshios parshios. You're not allowed to write a single parsha of the Torah by itself. This was taken so seriously that the Shagas Aryeh asks a very simple question, which is not our concern right now, but it just goes to show how much they took this point seriously, that really you should just have written hazinu. Because Shagas Aryeh says it's true that you're not allowed to write a single parsha, but the Rambam himself elsewhere says that you are permitted to write a chumash, one of the five chumashim by itself, Bereishis by itself, Dvarim by itself. Since hazinu is in Dvarim, it would have been sufficient, based on the argument of the Rambam, she'ein kosvin Torah parshios parshios, to write just Dvarim. Where does the Rambam see that you have to write, even Dvarim alone is less expensive than the whole Torah? So where does the Rambam see that because of this you have to write the whole Torah? And to answer this question has kept many Gedolei Olam busy over many generations. What does it prove, however? That the Rambam meant it very literally. The commandment in its fundamental essence is that each Jew has to have hazinu in his home. Each Jew has to write the parsha of hazinu. Because he cannot write the parsha of hazinu by itself, somehow it has been ordained that therefore he has to write the whole Torah. And he has to have the whole Torah because in that Torah there's a parsha of hazinu. What is so incredibly important about hazinu that it commands us and compels us to write an entire Torah, each and every one of us, and it becomes one of the 613 mitzvahs? There's another halacha which I wish every Rav would repeat to his congregation. Of course, in a manner that does not make him lose his job. But I wish that he would repeat this halacha to every member of his congregation. The Rambam says this was the first halacha of the laws of Sefer Torah that we just read. The Rambam says at the very last halacha in Hilchos Sefer Torah the following words. And this is in the 10th perek. Zayin, Ches, Tes, and Yud are the four chapters of the Rambam concerning Sefer Torah. At the end of perek Yud, the Rambam concludes and he says, Kol mi sheyoshev lifnei sefer Torah, yeshev bekovid rosh. Whoever sits in the presence of a sefer Torah, and the Rambam is not saying he's learning the sefer Torah, he's not speaking about kriyas haTorah, when it's read in public. Apparently, according to the Rambam, if there's a sefer Torah in the room, and it's covered, and it's in a cabinet,
or it's on top of a shelf or whatever, as long as it's not in a totally separate place, then you are called sitting before a Sefer Torah. What is the posture? What kind of comportment does a person have to have? What is his obligation when he's sitting in the presence of a Sefer Torah? So the Rambam says, Kol mi sheyoshev lifnei Sefer Torah, yeshev bekoved rosh. He sits with a certain sense of gravity, of seriousness. Okay, that's all right. So far, so good. Seriousness we can handle. Be'ema v'fachad. Kovet Rosh is the first of three descriptions. Serious, fear, and trembling. Fear and awe. Fear and awe. I love the Sefer Torah. I cherish the Sefer Torah. I want to kiss the Sefer Torah. Where's the fear and awe coming? Be'ema v'fachad. That's how a person has to sit in front of the Sefer Torah. And I suspect that if a person is in shul, he is sitting in front of a Sefer Torah, whether the davening is going on or not. Just being in the shul, being in the Beis Medrash, being in the sanctuary. He is in the presence of a Sefer Torah. Not one necessarily, sometimes 13 or 14 or 15. But he is in the presence of a Sefer Torah. What is his posture supposed to be? Kovet Rosh, Eima V'fachad. Fear and trembling. Why? What is it about the Sefer Torah that should initiate within us such an attitude of anxiety? I would use the word. I would say anxiety. A person has to sit on the edge of his seat. He cannot sit back and relax and lounge. That's not Eima V'fachad. He certainly cannot shoot the breeze. He certainly cannot talk about sports or about the business activities. He's sitting in the presence of a Sefer Torah. Now, we know that a sanctuary is Beis Hashem. And a Beis Hashem, you have to have certain respect for the sanctuary itself. A place where people come to daven and to learn is a holy place. It's the house of God. The house of God. I remember when we were negotiating for a variance to build our shul, requiring a structure which was not permitted unless you got the variance, because it's a residential neighborhood. So we went to the Board of Standards and Appeals, which is the judicial body that makes these decisions, and grants you the variance. And there were certain individuals in the community that they couldn't care less if it's a synagogue or anything else. It's too big, it's a monumental edifice, it's bigger than anything else around, and it's not fitting the tenor of the neighborhood. Never mind that two blocks away, there's the train station is above ground, and that there's one store after another, and whatever, Avenue J. Really, you know, the residential neighborhood of New York. But in any case, be that as it may, that was their objection. Okay? So the person is saying, you know, it's too big, it's monumental, and he's just very upset. So the judge, the chief judge, there were five judges, and the one in the center says to him, not Jewish, he's not Jewish. He says to this fellow who is Jewish and who's wearing a yarmulke and who's objecting to having the shul in his neighborhood. He says, did you ever travel the length and breadth of America? And he says, what does this judge want from me? I mean, what is this travelogue business? I'm talking milsa b'taima, I'm talking to the point, and he's fadraying me a cup. So he remains silent. He says, well, if you would have, you'd notice something. What would you have noticed? He's like talking to a child. Again, silence. You would have noticed that the church is the tallest and biggest building, and it's always on the top of the hill. Do you know why? That's what the judge asks him. Again, silence. Because it's God's house, that's why. Amazing. This person's saying it's a monumental edifice and it doesn't belong in the neighborhood, it doesn't fit the size of the buildings, it's taller, it's bigger, it's more prominent. And this non-Jew is sensitive enough to realize, of course it has to be more prominent, of course it has to be a great building, because it's God's house. It's not your house, it's God's house. Well, if it's God's house, obviously we have to treat it with a certain kind of respect. For God's house alone, for that reason alone, a person who enters into its confines and goes into that dimension has to be spiritual and sensitive. And he cannot bring the street with him. And you can't just chat with your neighbor like you're sitting in your own living room. But that isn't enough, says the Rambam. You also happen to be in front of a Sefer Torah. And wherever the Sefer Torah is, whether it's in your house or in someone else's house or in the shul, you have a responsibility for Kovod Rosh, Eima, and Pachad. Fear and trembling. You have to be serious to a fault. Why? Why? The Torah is my friend. The Torah is my guide. Why do I have to have this on the edge of my seat sensitivity? Why do I have to be afraid of the Sefer Torah? Says the Rambam in an almost cryptic expression, which he does not elucidate, Shehu ha'eid ha'ne'emon l'chol bo'ei olam. Because this is the trustworthy witness, the witness that never lies. And he's testifying to all the peoples of the world, Jew and non-Jew alike. The Torah is testifying, Shenemar v'hoya sham b'cha li'eid. It shall be there in that ark for you as a testimony. And that's it. The Rambam stops right there. No elucidation, no explanation. What testimony are we talking about? Well, if you look carefully at these psukim, you will discover a remarkable thing. That the testimony is exactly Shiras Ha'azinu. Write for yourself the Shira and place it into an ark, and there it shall be for you a testimony. Shall be for me a testimony? What testimony? What is the Rambam talking about? The Ribbono Shlom says, write this Shira. He calls it a Shira. According to the Rambam, it's the whole purpose of each person's obligation to write a Sefer Torah, to have that Shira in his house. Why does he have to have the Shira in his house? Because he has to have the testimony in his house. And what is that testimony saying? The testimony is describing the failure of Klal Yisrael to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu through thick and thin throughout the generations. The failure of Bnei Yisrael, when they got fat, and I might add stupid, and they started to ignore HaKadosh Baruch Hu and his laws, and in spite of what happened to them, they remained intransigent, and they failed him again and again and again. Now you imagine that somebody is testifying against a criminal, somebody that embezzled millions of dollars, and that person there is sitting and listening to the testimony. And he's leaning back in his seat, and he's doing the crossword puzzle. Or he's leaning back in his seat, and he's chatting with his lawyer. And the judge looks at this scene, and he says, how callous can you be? How insensitive can you be? The witness is talking about a crime that is astounding in its impact on so many innocent people. Astounding in the consequences to the economy. Astounding in the cruelty of this person's heart. And he has not the slightest regard. How should he sit then? In fear and in trembling. It's a remarkable thing. We have a Sefer Torah. The Sefer Torah has Ha'azinu. And Ha'azinu is a Shira. And what kind of a Shira is it? It's a Shira which describes the failure of Klal Yisrael. Incredible. And that Shira is something that we have to have with us at all times, so we are obligated to write it, and we can't write the Shira by itself, says the Rambam, so we have to write a whole Torah around it. And when we sit in front of that Shira, in front of that testimony, which is ongoing, day after day, it's a 24/7 loop that just keeps repeating itself. Why in the world does the Ribbono Shlom call this Ha'azinu of his a Shira? I believe
that there are three answers to this question. The simplest answer, and I think the least of the three, is that in fact everything works out in the end. That's why it's a Shira. In the end, we're okay. In the end, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you'll see the light. In the end, there will be a Yemos HaMashiach. In the end, the Goyim will get their due that was tormented us for all these centuries. In the end, they'll get their due. Harninu Goyim Amoki Dam Avodav Yikom. It's a posuk that we say in Avarachamim on Shabbos. The piyut that we say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should remember all of the martyrs, all of the Hashem Yimkom Damos of all the centuries, of all the martyrologies, of all of the terrible, terrible oppressions that we suffered through the Crusades and the Khmelnytsky massacres and the Hitler's destruction of such a great part of Klal Yisrael. Haninu go yimamo, everything will turn out all right in the end. That's reason number one. Reason number two. Tziduk hadin. We have in the Shira of Hazinu a statement that is repeated in Mizmor Shir Liyom HaShabbos and a statement that in its own way is repeated in Megillas Eicha. And in fact, the language of Hazinu was borrowed by Yirmiyahu a number of times. Part of Megillas Eicha is to say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is righteous. Part of Megillas Eicha is to sing the song of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's perfection. It is to exalt and extol HaKadosh Baruch Hu that his judgment is correct and that whatever we suffer, we deserved. And perhaps even more. Shofa chamoso al ha'etzim v'al ha'avonim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should have annihilated us, but instead he promises that he will preserve and protect us and we will never be destroyed completely, and rather I destroy the Beis HaMikdash instead. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always on the ascendant. He's always right. V'atam morom la'olam Hashem lahagid ki yosher Hashem tzuri v'lo avlo sabo. And we say in Hazinu at the very beginning, Hatzur tamim pa'alo. The deeds of the mighty one, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the fortress, the tzur, the great rock, is perfect. He is perfect. His deeds are perfect. All his ways are just. All his ways are just. He's never unfair. He's righteous and moral. Tzadik v'yosher hu. And part of the image of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the God of vengeance is a God who is kind and gentle and just, because it's not his fault. He gives us what is due and always less in measure of what we deserve. And that is a theme that is repeated over and over again in Megillas Eicha, and again in the particular context of Shiras HaZinu, it has front row center. Hatzur Tomim Paolo. And when do we say this pasuk? We say this pasuk when a Jew is buried. It is the pasuk called Tziduk Hadin, giving HaKadosh Baruch Hu that ultimate perfection, and that is what Kaddish is always about. Kaddish is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is beyond our understanding, beyond our comprehension, and he remains great no matter how many questions we have. And that is why it's called a Shira. That's reason number two. Again, reason number one, because at the very end, in fact, it turns out all right. Reason number two, because in fact, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's perfection is declared here, and that everything that happens, that we could say there's chaos in the world, there's confusion in the world is hefker, the world is a free-for-all, nothing happens for a purpose or a reason, and we say no. HaKadosh Baruch Hu declares in his Shira that no, it is not so. Whatever happens is with a cheshbon. There is a judge, and there is justice, and that is a great Shira. To take a world that appears to the naked eye to be completely chaotic and without meaning and purpose, and grant it meaning and purpose, and give it a direction, and say that there's a master to this palace, that is an unbelievable Shira. But there's a third reason, and I think that's the most important of all.
When Bnei Yisrael came out of Mitzrayim, there was a tremendous hope. And one could suspect that after that hope was dashed on the rocks of Chet HaEgel, and on the rocks of the constant complaining of Bnei Yisrael, on the rocks of the spies that came back with such a terrible report, on the rocks of one Oved Avodah Zarah after another, on the rocks of Yerovam ben Nevat, on the rocks of all the failures every time HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends a shofet to fix them and to guide them, and a Shmuel that they want a melech instead. And throughout the generations, the Jews giving up on HaKadosh Baruch Hu and abandoning him, we would have said to ourselves, how much can any human being tolerate? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu had hopes, the hopes were dashed, the experiment was a failure, and we give up the experiment and we go on. And yet, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I take you and I keep you no matter what. But maybe we will suspect that that's in the beautiful, warm, intimate moment of the springtime of our relationship. Maybe that's only when we're coming out of Mitzrayim. Maybe that's only in the Chag, which is the Tkufas HaAviv, the Chag which represents potential and hope and the dream of what might be. But not when HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees it unraveling and emptying out, and the great cornucopia which HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides turns out to be the source of the Tzara itself. Yishman Yeshurun Vayivot. Maybe then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will not like us anymore, and will not cherish us anymore, and not care about us anymore. And maybe there'll be churban after churban until finally HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you didn't learn yet, you didn't listen yet, enough with you. I take somebody else, or I destroy the world. And yet HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to us, in the springtime, I'm going to read you chapter and verse, the unraveling of history. I'm going to read you chapter and verse how you will behave. I'm going to tell you the story of your destiny and of your future. And I tell you this now because I know it all. And I'm going to keep you anyhow. I love you anyhow. I cherish you anyhow. I want you to change. I want you to be better. And you know, it's a very remarkable thing. When the Jews suffered destruction after destruction, you can ask the question, what is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's orientation here? And you know who asked that question? Yirmiyahu HaNavi. And where did he ask this question? At the very end of Megillas Eicha. We repeat, Hashiveinu Hashem Eilecha v'noshuva chadesh yomeinu kekedem, because we don't feel comfortable with that very last pasuk. So we repeat the penultimate pasuk, the pasuk next to the end, Hashiveinu, and everybody intones together with the chazan, Hashiveinu Hashem Eilecha v'noshuva. But what is the last pasuk of Megillas Eicha? Ki im ma'os ma'astanu, katzafta aleinu ad miyod. And there are two ways of reading this pasuk. One way is, Ribbono shel Olam, you had tremendous contempt for us, and you waxed exceedingly angry at us. That is a very negative pasuk, and warrants the repetition of Hashiveinu to end on a good note, on a positive note, on a hopeful note. But there's another way of reading the pasuk, and that is the way which the great Amora Rish Lakish, the colleague of Rabbi Yochanan, Reb Shimon ben Lakish, how he read this pasuk. And the way he reads this pasuk is full of hope. Ki im ma'os ma'astanu. Ki meaning, even if it appears, because of all this destruction, that you have total contempt for us, and you don't want us anymore. But I have proof, says Yirmiyahu HaNavi, that it cannot be. You do not have contempt for us, that you love us dearly. Wherein lies that proof? Katzafta aleinu ad miyod. Says Rish Lakish, if it's me'isa, If it's contempt, ein tikva, there is no hope. Im ketzef, if it's anger, yesh tikva. Shekol ha-ko'es sofo lehisratzos. Because sooner or later you make up. So there's a very simple mashal to understand this. Imagine a boss has two workers, and he decided that he's not happy with the way they're working. He's not happy with their work ethic. He's not happy with their production. He just doesn't want them. He calls them in, and he dismisses them both. He says, you can pick up your paycheck on the end of the day. But whereas, Legabe, worker number one, let's call him Reuven. He just dismisses him. Gamarnu, chick-chack. Shimon, he gives a talking to for over an hour. And he tells him everything that's wrong with him. And he piles it on. And he yells and he screams. And then he says, hey, you're finished. And pick up your check at the end of the day. Shimon and Reuven come together in the locker room. And they're collecting their things. And Shimon starts to cry. He says, Mela, I'm fired. But why the diatribe? What does he have against me so? Why does he hate me so much? You went in, you went out. I saw you were out in 2 seconds. And Reuven, who's maybe not a great worker, but he's smart. And Reuven says to Shimon, don't you understand? There's no question in my mind that tomorrow he'll call you back to work. He says, what makes you say that? He says, he's a very busy man. He doesn't waste his time. If that's the end of the relationship, he doesn't have to waste his time and give you all kinds of criticisms and tell you what's wrong with you and hit you over the head. It's only because he wants you to be better, and that's proof positive that he wants you back. That is, in fact, katzavta aleinu ad miyod. Why all the anger? Why so much punishment? Why generation after generation and patch after patch, massacre after massacre? Why? You know what the answer is? Because it's not Meisa. Because Meisa, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm finished with you. Goodbye and good luck. And at some point in history, it's over. But if history has to go on and on, and the punishment and the pain gets even maybe sometimes harder and worse and more difficult to bear, but it's proof positive that Hashem wants to teach us a lesson. But why should he want to teach us a lesson if he's not interested in us anymore? But the Teretz says, boy, is he interested in us. Boy, does he want us. And he's desperately waiting for that change to take place. And he says at the beginning of our history, in those warm and sweet springtime years, when they're still in the midbar, I know what it's going to be like. And af al pi kein, I make a covenant with you. And he says, in the midst of the most harsh criticism in Parshas Bechukosai, v'af gam zos b'yosam be'eretz oyveihem, when they will be in the lands of their enemy, meaning they'll be in exile, meaning they'll be churban after churban. Lo ma'astim v'lo ge'altim l'chalosam u'lohafer brisi itam. Ki'ani Hashem Elokeihem. I am their God. I am with them forever. They are my people. Ki anu amecha v'ata malkeinu v'ata elokeinu. You are mine and I am yours. Es Hashem ha'amarta hayom v'Hashem ha'amircha hayom. Lios lo liam segula. Bonim atem l'Hashem Elokeichem. V'atem tiyu li mamleches kohanim v'goy kadosh. Over and over again in the Torah and in the Nevi'im, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Ahavti eschem ama Hashem. I love you. And just to conclude, I wanted to read to you a radak. The pasuk in Yeshayahu is in Perek Nun. And it says in this pasuk that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is speaking to Bnei Yisrael like someone who's speaking to his wife. And she's an errant wife. And she's a troublemaking wife. And she's a difficult wife. And the husband says, enough is enough. What's next? Is there a get or is there no get? Says the Ribbono Shel Olam to Bnei Yisrael, Koy Omar Hashem. Thus says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Eize sefer krisus imchem asher shalachti. I chased away your mother, but did I give her a get? We're not talking here about an aguna.
We're talking about, I didn't give her a get because I'm going to take her back. It's not final. It's not finished. It's not, I'm interested in somebody else. That's my wife, forever and ever. It's never going to be anybody else. It's never going to be different. Where's the get? Can you show me a get? Because you see, we point to the Khmelnytsky massacres. Low estimate, 100,000 Jews at that time. I mean, it sounds like millions today compared to the total population. Community after community was destroyed. Nemirov, Tulchin, Uman. You know, the Shach wrote a sefer, and he describes the destruction of Uman. He says, on the same day, 1,500 people were killed in Uman in Russia on Shabbos. The Cossacks with whom the wicked mob had again made an alliance chased all the Jews from the city into the fields and vineyards. It sounds like deja vu, but this is in the 1600s, in 1648. In the fields and vineyards where the villains surrounded them in a circle, stripped them to their skin and ordered them to lie on the ground. They spoke to the Jews with consoling words. Why do you want to be killed, strangled, slaughtered? God poured out his anger on you. What do you want from him? Why do you stay close to him? Why do you insist on being his people? Look at where he got you throughout history. Join us. Accept our God. Accept our God. And everything will be wonderful. Wouldn't that be safe for you to worship our gods, our images and crosses? And we would form one people and we would unite together. But the holy and faithful people who so often allowed themselves to be murdered for the sake of Hashem raised their voices together to the Almighty in heaven and cried, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Ribbono Shalom, we have been murdered for your sake. Ki olecha haragnu kol hayoyim. And we are ready to do it again. Let us remain faithful to you. And they confessed their sins and said, we are guilty, and thus recognized the divine judgment. That's what the Shach writes in his Megillas Ofer, in the description of the massacre. And then the villains turned upon them, and there was not one left of the 1,500. Everyone to the end was massacred, man, woman, and child. And this repeated itself over and over and over again, and you could ask yourself, how long and how can we tolerate any of this? And the question is, what is this? Is this Me'isa? Is this perhaps the contempt of a God that has abandoned us, katzafta aleinu ad me'od? It's too harsh. It's repeated itself too many times. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to still be waiting for us. There is no get. She's just been sent away. So the Pasuk says, Eize sefer krisus imchem asher shilachtiyo. Says the Radak, there seems to be a contradiction from Navi to Navi. Because Yirmiyahu speaks in a different tone. And his voice says there was a get. Because he says, Shilachtiyo v'etein sefer krisuseha eleha. I gave her a divorce. So which is it? Is it Yeshayahu? Where is the divorce? Or is it Yirmiyahu? I gave her a divorce. So you know what the Radak says? He says because Yirmiyahu was speaking about the first exile of the 10 tribes that disappeared into oblivion. But then he says, Shenosan lohem sefer krisus shloyiya mehem oid melech. Ki bekibutz golius nemar va'avdi David nosi alehem. Va'omar v'lo yechotzu od l'shtei mamlochos. Avol Yehuda lo nosan sefer krisus. Elo kebaal shemotzi ishto mi beiso shekotzaf oleo. Avol lo nosan lo sefer krisus. L'fi, why? L'fi she'osid l'achzira elov. Cain Yehuda osid la'azil ha'malchus lo. Asks the Radak, but just a moment. The picture still is only bittersweet. Where is the joy in losing 10 tribes? Where is the joy in a get for 10 out of 12 Shvatim? And you know what he answers? He answers a remarkable thing. That in the end of days, these tribes will all unite under David. And because they unite under David, they are reconciled to the image even those 10 tribes, of having never received a get. Because once they become part of David, they become part of the history of a people that identify themselves and are clear to their mission, and every generation, a significant segment remains true to Hashem, but more important than anything else, Hashem always remains true to every segment. And he says, these are all my people. So it's only temporary that we lose the 10 tribes. And ultimately, when you look at the picture, was there a get or wasn't there a get? The answer is there was no get. And that is why Ha'azinu is an incredible Shira. Because Hashem says, you are mine, in every single one of those words of anger. And that is really the ultimate beauty, the ultimate Shira of Hashem's relationship with us, through thick and thin and no matter what. And this is really the secret of reciting Ha'azinu in the context of Psukei D'Zimra, and why that is the last pasuk of Megillas Eicha. Because it is the most hopeful, perhaps, of all the psukim in Gan's Tanakh.